What's up, everyone? Thanks for being with us again this week on the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. We took a week off, so we appreciate your patience, and hopefully you were able to get by without us. I'm quite sure you were. By us, I mean my co-host, Eric Edholm, and myself, Arthur Arkish, and we are going to talk a little bit of franchise tag, but first I want to check in with Eric and see what is shaking on his end of the Skype call. What's happening, my man?
Well, I'm actually the opposite here. I don't think anyone was able to kind of sleep or get through their week without us, but maybe that's just me. Maybe it's my giant ego that makes me think that. No, I'm good. We took the family to Florida, had a little Disney time, and that recharged my batteries certainly for the free agent lead up and the run up to the combine and everything. So yeah, I'm good to go, man.
Recharge your batteries. So Disneyland, Disney World, I think it was, doesn't qualify as one of those vacations that you need a vacation from when you get home.
Oh no, it does. No, absolutely, it does. It's especially with twins who are approaching the age of three. I mean, you know, several meltdowns and unmet expectations. But no, it was mostly a great time.
Well, I never knew the meaning, Eric, of, I used to hear kind of young parents say that you need a vacation from vacation, but I didn't really get it until I had my own. I have a son who's almost the same age as Eric's twins, and I actually just had to run inside his preschool to change his poopy diaper because his teachers won't do that for me.
So you need a vacation from poopy diapers is what you need, right?
I'm literally taping this podcast in the preschool parking lot. So anyway, today we're taping on Tuesday. It's February 20th. It is franchise tag day. And before we dive into it, Eric, does this conjure up any memories from your own childhood? Was tag a big game for you? I know flashlight tag was all the rage for me when I was kind of in between the being a true kid and being an adult, but kind of just having an excuse to be out at night with my friends and maybe causing a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty fun game growing up. I mean, I didn't like it because I didn't have the lateral quickness required for the game. I was a little tall and gawky and awkward as a child. I say a little. I'm kind of understating maybe a little bit here, but I had to use guile. I had to use sort of whatever wits I could to sort of get by with my athletic limitations.
So you were more of a Wonderlic guy than a three-cone drill guy. Oh, wait, whoa, we're going to talk combine next week, maybe for a minute at the end of this podcast. And yes, Pro Football Weekly will be on hand at the combine and can't wait to bring you all the coverage from there. But again, yeah, today's tag day. So Eric wrote our kind of primer or his prediction piece, I should say. You can find that up at profootballweekly.com. And of course, I should also be reminding the listeners, you can find us, our podcast, both this and the Bears podcast, Fantasy Football. We don't do a ton of that in the offseason, but check us all out on iTunes and leave us a rating and a review. And of course, after you're subscribed over there, we do appreciate it. So let's just dive in, Eric. It seems like a lackluster free agent class to me outside of the quarterback position, but it's going to seem even more so here, certainly in a couple weeks. Where's sort of your head at on how teams will use the tag? I know you wrote in your story, even that's become a lot less of a tool or a less frequently used tool than we've seen even in recent seasons.
Yeah, I mean, it was 5 years ago, or 2012, I should say, that offseason where, we saw it used, I think, 21 times was the number, and it's only been used in the 5 years since 37 times. I believe it was 7 last year, 10 the year before that, 7, 6. So, I think we'll see a number somewhere between 7 and 10 this year. And, some of these, like last year, we had players like Chandler Jones who were tagged one day and then a deal was struck the next day. So, sometimes these are tools to be used. And that's how it's designed. I mean, it was created in the first place as a way to prevent teams from losing out on players, not just to hold them down and trade them like we potentially could see with Kirk Cousins. So, yeah, I think we will see players tagged that ends up leading to a deal, whether it's Le'Veon Bell or somebody like that. I mean, obviously, it could happen quickly, or it could be a DeMarcus Lawrence situation where it drags out a little bit. So, yeah, it's not used as frequently, and I suspect this year falls in line with what we've seen in the past few seasons.
All right, so before we go through on a case-by-case basis, because I feel like that's the way you need to do it, and I'm curious to get your take on how these days go. Well, not that you would know specifically, but I wonder what it's like being in the players' shoes for this couple week period. They feel like they're so close to the multi-year payday, and that, not that there's anything to turn your nose up from the franchise tag, because obviously there are huge amounts of dough too for one season. But you mentioned Kirk Cousins, and I guess because it is the Washington franchise, and it is so unpredictable, it is frankly so infamous for some of its previous handlings with contracts, we can't say definitively what's going to happen here. But Eric, it seems to me there are more than enough reasons that we can all but rule out Washington trying to shackle Kirk Cousins with the tag after they've traded for Alex Smith. For one thing, Kirk Cousins could sign it right away and Washington would be absolutely screwed for $34 million, right?
Right, and that's, you know, they've already threatened to do that, I think, you know, sort of through private channels and whatnot, right, and just talking to people there, is that, okay, you want to give us $34.5 million? Great, we'll take it. And then you'll be forced to trade us, or we'll have to sort of work something else out. And you're not going to put $50 million into the position, at the, or more than that, actually, with Alex Smith. He will be on board as of, March 14th. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, the Redskins backed themselves into the corner with this, the way they handled Cousins. And when you hear the words of Scott McLuhan, the former general manager, who's now advising with the Cleveland Browns, you know, you could just tell they were never truly behind him and in love with him. And their actions back that up. I mean, yes, they didn't want to lose him. That's why they franchised him 2 years in a row, paid him a total of $44 million. But now they're sort of paying for their delay game, you know, their stall tactics. So this is where they're at. I think they realize they're backed in a corner. You know, if Cousins chose to file a grievance, they would probably win that because of the spirit of the rule, as you said. They've already agreed to acquire Smith. They have no plans for Kirk Cousins beyond this year. So yeah, I think there's a good chance that in order to not give a poor appearance and to possibly lose that battle, They'll let him walk and get their compensatory pick next year.
And on the Kirk Cousins front, we're doing a fun little series this week at ProFootballWeekly.com and just sort of mocking the veteran quarterback. We're not mocking them. We're predicting where they're going to land, where they'll sign, and for how much. So make sure you check that out. Eric's working on his today. Mine's up at the site already, and we've got some different ideas. Or maybe we have some same. I haven't seen Eric, but I know we'll have some interesting thoughts on where the top quarterbacks are going. And before we get some of the other tag candidates, let me just ask Eric, let me come back with the whole Scott McLuhan thing. Of course, he was in Washington. Well, actually, let me think. He would not have been in Washington when they drafted Cousins, but he was under that roof and saw him close for, what, two or three seasons, right?
I think that's right. I'd have to go back and check the timing of when
he arrived a year or two after, but I know he's seen him and knows him intimately, right?
Yeah, sounds right.
But it's his quote, Eric, that Kirk Cousins isn't special. Frankly, I don't disagree, and I'm not sure that that's even supposed to be a slight. I mean, there's only a handful of truly special quarterbacks in the NFL, but didn't we just see with Nick Foles winning a Super Bowl MVP, the ghost of Peyton Manning a couple years ago? I mean, do you think teams that are preparing to open up the checkbook and write a record check or contract, should they have reservations that they're doing it for a quarterback who isn't special, or does it just mean he needs the right surroundings to bring a team to where it needs to get to?
Yeah, I think you nailed it right there, which is that you don't need a special quarterback to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
If you have one, that's great, and it can cover up some other problems. You know, the Green Bay Packers were a number six seed with questions on defense and other spots when they won the Super Bowl because Aaron Rodgers was just that good, and there are other examples of that there. You could argue that the Patriots weren't anywhere close to a vintage classic version of themselves, but Brady was special. He was an MVP this season. He threw for 500 and whatever yards in the Super Bowl, you know, and that covered up the fact their defense was truly awful in that game. So not covered up, but I mean, allowed them at least a shot at winning. So
yeah,
I mean, we've, like you said, with Foles and with other examples in the past, if you have a great surrounding cast, a quarterback you trust to not make mistakes and will deliver positive plays more often than not, then yeah, it's a great situation. So now if you're ready to commit a you know, 18-20% of your salary cap to the position, you better be darn sure that he can do a lot for you. So that's, I guess, where I would hedge a little and say, yeah, I mean, look, if the New York Jets or the Minnesota Vikings or you know, any other team, Denver Broncos, are going to commit major cap dollars and reshape their roster in order to afford them, they better be sure that Cousins is close to special or pretty darn good.
Right. An interesting point there. You mentioned reshape your roster. Certainly you're reshaping your salary cap, of course, as you just alluded to, up to maybe 20% minimally to make this record contract happen. But I'm of the belief that you better have the roster ready. It doesn't make sense for me for a rebuilding team to be kicking the tires on Kirk Cousins. I'm just, that's kind of where I'm at on this thing. He is in his prime right now. He's ready to win right this second. So are you going to want him soaking up that salary cap while you're still having to rebuild up the defense or his skill positions or his offensive line? To me, that doesn't make as much sense. And again, you guys got to go to the site to check out our suggestions here. But that was what my thinking was when I paired Kirk Cousins with his next landing spot. So, Eric, let's get to a couple of these other interesting dudes. There's a couple of interesting pass rushers that are both a little volatile for my liking, but there's such a premium on the position that I don't know if the Dallas Cowboys and the Detroit Lions have any choice with DeMarcus Lawrence and Ezekiel Ansah, respectively, but to make them imminent tag candidates as they continue to work toward a long-term deal.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, and I think it – you know, I mean, that's sort of the price to do in business these days. And you know, especially with a new coach in Detroit, Matt Patricia, you know, Lord knows he needed some pass rush in the Super Bowl the past couple seasons even. But, yeah, I mean, I think you look at that situation, it's a team you know very well. I mean, they just don't have reliable options. And I think he finished well enough down the stretch to where you can say, okay, you know, Ziggy Ansah could be pretty darn good. I mean, yeah, you have to deal with some of those injuries and inconsistencies and the flashes of greatness mixed with, you know, ordinary play at times. But and we don't really know his age. Maybe he's 29. Maybe he's not. Who knows? But, yeah, no, I think he you know, I think they have to do it. And with the Cowboys, too. I mean, they're so scheme dependent on a pass rush to happen. And so many other issues on that defense, whether it's injuries or suspensions or potential cap hits or whatever. You know, they obviously have to have some of what, you know, DeMarcus Lawrence delivered last year. Do I think he's going to be a 14.5 sack guy every single season? No. But I did like him coming out a lot, and I thought, you know, last year was a clear indication of what he could be in the right situation. So, yeah, they have no choice. They're going to tag him, and that's, you know, that's going to be what they live with, another tough financial spot they're in. But they somehow find ways to make it work and usually keep competitive.
To Eric, and it's Eric Edholm and Arthur Eckersh on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, and to Eric's point and to DeMarcus Lawrence's credit, his NFL path it's been a little circuitous. It didn't start, you know, on kind of a meteoric rise. Had the suspension. He's had a couple back injuries, I believe, including one or maybe multiple back surgeries, and he's been able to overcome that. So, yes, it does sort of fuel the perception that he has some volatility to him, but it also maybe should kind of, you know, help him out in terms of him being a resilient, persevering dude who was able to overcome some of that earlier stuff. A great point by you, though. I was talking about the volatility of Lawrence because of what we just discussed. And Ziggy Ansah, you mentioned the age. He's had a long track record of injury, a lot of injuries in his past as well. And of course, he had the real dud season 2 years ago, at least from a pass rush production standpoint. But as you mentioned, if you look around these guys in Detroit, I don't know if anyone knew who Kerry Hyder and Anthony Zettel were heading into the past two seasons, right. But those were the only other dudes they had. And, you know, speaking of volatile, David Irving obviously falls into that category. Actually, I believe he's a free agent, too. The Cowboys have some guys inside. They're excited about Malik Collins, to name one. I think Tyrone Crawford's still there, but no one that's really going to move the needle too much. So, yeah, I think those two are very, very likely to happen. And who knows, gosh, could happen shortly after we finish taping here. But lastly, Eric, on the Ziggy Ansah point, we hear it often in baseball. Do you remember any other examples of guys whose age is really kind of up for debate and could potentially be, you know, at least mentioned at the bargaining table? You'd have to think that's an interesting handling for his team and the Lions and his representation. I'm not sure who represents Ziggy.
Yeah, they would obviously, you know, be a situation where, you know, Ziggy Ansah, first of all, people don't know the story. He was born in Ghana. So the state-run newspaper there had published a story where that actually had him as 2 years older. So, yeah, it is kind of a Rafael Furcal baseball-type deal where you always hear about these Dominican players who are about 2 or 3 years younger, or some have been even more than that, which is crazy to think. But, yeah. You know, the team came out with a statement of support against, you know, saying that, no, we have his correct age. the age we were given from BYU. We've checked on this thing. It is correct. So I kind of said that half kiddingly a little bit. But yeah, I mean, he's obviously probably on the older side of 29, soon to be 30, you know, right, because of the injuries. And yet here's a player who really, you know, is still in the formative years of his of football playing career. I mean, he started so late, was a late breakout in his career, a meteoric rise in the draft. So in theory, you could say he still has upside as a player if he could ever put it together. And we've seen some special moments out of him.
Yeah, that's a good point. You do wonder though how the injuries affect sort of that you know, that process. It's certainly not really linear for that reason, but you're right. It is kind of a stunting, movable chess piece up front. And we should mention, well, I don't think Matt Patricia's going to have a problem finding out how to use him best, assuming he has him back. But that's one of the things Terrell Austin did really well, was run those line games up front and know how to get the best out of Ansa when he was on the field. So a couple interesting dudes there. Another one who intrigues me, Eric, just kind of moving down your list of the franchise tag prediction story at ProFootballWeekly.com. I'm passing over Kyle Fuller. We'll get to him, and we have the Bears podcast too. I'm sure we'll discuss him on. Sammy Watkins, though, is a unique case because a guy who's up for that second contract, and he's already on his second team, obviously, and the Rams had to invest a lot to bring him in. The numbers didn't jump off the screen, but I think there's a belief there that the fact he stayed healthy and the fact that now he's in, you know, a real big boy 2018 NFL offense with Sean McVay, that maybe year two in that scheme could really yield some better results than it did initially when they get, if and when they're able to tag him and or sign him to a long-term deal.
Yeah. And to his credit, he played a full season. You know, injuries had been an issue in the past. You know, he arrives in August, you know, folds in, and they had a package of plays for him. I think they purposely kind of limited his exposure at first, and they had Robert Woods kind of locked into that top role after they signed him as a free agent. Cooper Kupp, you know, the precocious rookie, obviously was probably as mature as a third or fourth year veteran in a lot of ways, just given his age. He was 23 or going to be 24, I think, in his rookie season, you know, and comes from a coaching background, a sophisticated passing offense. So those two guys were always going to be ahead of him from that standpoint. But then you look, I mean, he made big plays. He had 8 touchdowns. He, you know, averaged, you know, 16 yards a catch or whatever it was. And, you know, a full offseason with Jared Goff, that's great. You know, that could really develop. And so, yes, it would be more cost prohibitive for them to tag LaMarcus Joyner, the safety. And he's a valuable piece, and they would hate to lose him, especially with some other free agents like Tremaine Johnson in that secondary. I mean, you don't have a first-round pick. I mean, you don't have a – what do they have? They're missing a second-round pick because of the trade.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're short draft picks anyway. They're probably going to lose at least 2, if not 3, members of that secondary. That hurts. So, but you can't afford to pull off the trade for Watkins and then not keep him after a year, given that he showed good things in a limited sort of sphere. You know, so, yeah, I think they're kind of – I want to say locked into it. I could be wrong, but – they're almost forced to do that and then just hope they can get a deal with Joyner and that he doesn't hit the open market.
Seems a lot more unlikely than I'd have to assume, Eric, that Tremaine Johnson probably returns. They had to tag him twice in a row. I don't think they got the consistent level of performance that they had hoped to see from him. You think Tremaine likely to move on and be one of the top corners available here in about 3 weeks on the free agent market?
Yeah, I think so. I think it makes a lot of sense for him to try to cash in because his, you know, his perception is still pretty high, mm-hmm. and people love those long, big corners to match up with what, you know, receivers. I mean, a team like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I could just see. I don't know. I'm just plucking this out of thin air, but I mean, I could see them going big for him, given the way their secondary played last year, the number of big receivers in that division. You know, Michael Thomas, Julio Jones, et cetera, et cetera. You know, Devin Funchess. It's, you know. They need someone to match up with him, and he can't count on a rookie to be that guy, I don't think, even with what might be a decent cornerback class. So, yeah, I mean, there's a market for him. I think he's looking to cash in, and you know, he hasn't doesn't seem like he has any real ties to the Rams to where he would take some kind of discount. Absolutely think he's going to be somebody who looks to cash in elsewhere.
Bucks make a lot of sense, too, because what they're picking, top 7, I want to say, 7th overall, I believe, and of course have just a massive pass rush need, too. So
yep.
This draft looking like it's going to be very top heavy at both of those spots, and that's not unusual at premium positions. Obviously, if you want to find the blue guys, you gotta pounce early. But that's all the more reason to think maybe they would cross off one of those big to-dos in free agency, and then see where it sets them up for the draft. Always so interesting to see how teams kind of attack free agency, telling us how they sort of view not only, of course, their own roster, but the free agent class and the draft ahead. You know, trying to cross off certain needs and position yourself for best available player. So. Handful of minutes left here on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. We're just running down Eric Edholm's franchise tag candidate list or most likely recipients, and we'll throw out a couple additional names as well. But just moving down the list, I got a couple more for you here, Eric. How about a couple more receivers in Allen Robinson? A couple different situations, of course. Allen Robinson tore the ACL about three snaps into his season last year's contract here in Jacksonville, and didn't follow up that monster sophomore campaign with a really good one in 2016. So it's been a while since we've seen the dominant Allen Robinson. And then a little bit further down the list, you got Jarvis Landry, who, of course, has just been prolific producer in terms of making catches, but how much do you want to spend, as you put it, for a possession receiver who doesn't have great speed and probably can't play outside?
Yeah, and let's start with Landry. I mean, I say that lovingly, right? I mean, I know what Jarvis Landry is, and I like him as a player. I really do. I probably like him more than a lot of the Twitter draft scouts who say, you can find these guys. And I understand that. There's an argument to be made for that. But he's got rare competitiveness.
Exactly. You know, tenacious, dude.
Yeah, I mean, he's out there, you know, I think he's drawing double teams, which most players of his skill set do not do, and he's dictating coverage. Now, maybe some of that has to do with the fact that Devontae Parker hasn't developed the way they hoped, and other receivers on that team have maybe disappointed a little bit. And, you know, you can't count on you know, the Isaiah Ford or somebody like that to rise up and be, you know, inadequate replacement. I mean, they're different players, but the point is, I don't think they want to dip back into drafting another receiver to make up for it, or to get somebody for $7 or $8 million a year if they lost him, and get, you know, sort of half the production and half the value out there. So with quarterback issues, Tannehill, we don't know what else they'll do at the position. I think you want as many reliable targets as you can. So I understand why they'd want to keep him, but the price is really the biggest thing. And with the Jags, I mean, look, they're another team that I just don't think can let any kind of weapons go. And if it costs them a Alshon Jeffrey-esque, you know, ask 1 year deal to keep him, play him on the 1 year tender, hopefully parlay that into a long-term deal, I think it's worth it, because, you know, Bortles, $19 million will come off the books after this year. You know, they may draft somebody and go young. You can afford, if Allen Robinson plays well this coming season, they could sign him to a long-term deal, perhaps move on from Bortles, go a little cheaper at quarterback, and make, you know, the Jenga piece all kind of work financially.
Yeah, and different types of receivers, too. I'm really excited if he can kind of stay on the straight and narrow. Well, of course, Landry and Robinson different, but even just in Jacksonville, they drafted Dede Westbrook. He's Biletnikoff winner. He is an explosive player, and I think he showed a lot of exciting things. And again, if he can keep his nose clean and stay out of trouble, there were some issues, of course, following him out of Oklahoma. I think he's got a chance to be very dynamic, too, but a totally different type of receiver than Robinson, who's a big go-up-and-get-it guy, versus Westbrook, who's going to try and get on top of defenses and scare them that way. So, but I guess the reason I bring it up is, of course, you know, the Jaguars also had success with the undrafted Keelan Cole. Actually, yep. I don't know what the Jaguars are doing, but between, I know Allen Hurns fell off after he got the new deal, but he did have a 1,000-yard season as an undrafted guy, I think, in year two. Now they got this excitement with Keelan Cole brewing a little bit. So it's interesting, because it looks like since Tom Coughlin and Doug Marrone took over, they've kind of tried to sort of reset the table a little bit at wide receiver. But I do tend to agree with you. Robinson has some special qualities in him, and this is a team you figure is going to be on the cusp of Super Bowl contention again this season. So why do you want to let a guy like that get away? And I guess the reason I go there, Eric, is because I skipped over Kyle Fuller, but to me there's a lot of similarities with Kyle Fuller, just in that Ryan Pace inherited him and has done a lot of work to try and reshuffle the corner deck, more so in free agency with guys last year like Prince of Macamora and Marcus Cooper, of course, and then he had a couple undrafted guys in Cravon LeBlanc and Bryce Callahan, too. But now you got Fuller, who seems to have figured it out, and this is a defense that doesn't seem to be too many pieces away. We saw Ryan Pace manage to keep one of Phil Emery's few solid picks last year in Charles Leno with an extension, and just as well as Fuller played. He had like 25, 27 pass breakups or something like that. Not huge interceptions numbers, but teams were really avoiding him a lot, and he was really aggressive versus the run too. So I just think it would be a huge, huge loss if the Bears decided not to tag him. I think that'd be a really big surprise.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they didn't pick up that fifth-year option, and everybody kind of saw the end coming, and everybody sort of thought, okay, this just didn't work out. He'll go, you know, play for the Baltimore Ravens or whatever and you know, try to rebuild his career there a year ago. But now, like you said, after a good season in which he established himself as that top guy, you know, maybe with a couple hiccups here and there, but overall very, very good, and I think worthy of that tag. And does that lead to a long-term deal? Does that, you know, do they find that common ground? Is he happy in Chicago? Those are all questions they have to sort of roll the dice on a little bit. I just don't think they can afford losing him. And I think you make absolutely the right point about the defense too. And the reason why you bring back Vic Fangio and keep that a lot of that coaching staff intact on that side of the ball is because you feel like, hey, look, they're darn close. You know, they're right there. And yeah. You want to try to stop whoever the Vikings bring in a quarterback in that offense, and you want to stop Aaron Rodgers and Matthew Stafford, you better be darn good on that side of the ball, because Mitch Trubisky can't get in shootouts with these guys every week. So, yes, these are the pieces that need to be retained to keep the Bears competitive in a tough division.
Yep, and we should not discount either, of course, Vic Fangio back, but just the effect that he had on Kyle Fuller. It was almost uncomfortable, Eric, being at Hallis Hall on a weekly basis for Vic's segments and hear him kind of publicly read Fuller the Riot Act a little bit. He needs to repair his confidence. We don't know what's going on. It was just a knee scope in August, and now he's going to miss the whole season. So I really felt like Fangio pushed the right buttons with Fuller to kind of coax that career year out of him. And it's all the more reason to think that there's sort of a comfort, a familiarity there that the Bears need to try and find a way to build on. So just a couple minutes left on the PFW podcast. He's Eric. I'm Arthur. I got a couple offensive linemen for you at home. We got Andrew Norwell, the Panthers. I believe he is going to be the guy at the guard position. But the Panthers could find themselves... Well, I don't know. You tell me how the Panthers are going to try and divvy that up, because they've got some other tough decisions coming too, and it looks like some other O-line changes somewhere not too far down the line for them as well.
Yeah, and it's been really hard getting information out of Carolina. There's a few things going on. Yeah. You know, Marty Herney, the GM, the interim GM, right, and former interim GM, and now he's sort of had these charges against him cleared. You know, there's obviously been a few other things that the franchise has been dealing with in the front office. Everybody has been on kind of lockdown and very quiet about that. So getting information on what their plans are for Noel has been very, very difficult. I've gotten nowhere on that front, admittedly. So it was a guess by me that they will franchise him. Other reports have suggested they might let him hit the market. I think that would be a huge mistake because, you know, he's gone from undrafted nobody to a really, really good player, an all-pro level player in short time. And, you know, I know Trey Turner got big money before. I know that Matt Khalil got big money. I think they're going to admit that mistake at some point and let him go. And Ryan Khalil has said, you know, has said that I believe this is going to be his final season. So all these changes, even with the big money they gave to Turner, I still feel like You can make big investments with a pair of guards the way the Saints did a generation ago when Drew Brees is quarterback and make it work. You don't have to be tackle dependent, and I think that's the mistake they made with Matt Khalil. So they can make this work by finding more draft solutions at offensive tackle. It's a pretty good year to do it. And Marty Herney's had a high hit rate on his high picks if he is indeed the GM in waiting. So, you know, I think that's the way they kind of handle it. I think they should lock Norwell up and make sure, because he would get a deal in about 5 minutes from the New York Giants or any other team that needs offensive line help.
That's a good point on the guards, and not only the Saints. We've seen some other front offices. Oakland comes to mind, obviously, with Gabe Jackson and Kelechi Assembly. The Ravens, at least before Assembly left, they had all had, you know, with Grubbs, had some big-time money tied up at the position, too. So that's a good point. you kind of teased to the Giants. We'll just connect them. Who knows? It's hard to know what Gettleman does in his new post, maybe without keeping an eye on what happens with the stud from his old post. But they've got Justin Pugh to decide on, Weston Richburg, too. You know they need to get one or both of those guys back, or at least I would certainly think that. But, Eric, we only got a minute or two left here, and Sheldon Richardson's another interesting case also on this story. Make sure you go to profootballweekly.com and check out the whole story. But another instance of Seattle gave up a lot to get Richardson, and after the disappointing season they had, you'd hate to think that he was just going to be a rental. I know they'd hate to think that. So another volatile dude, and that, there's a lot of layers to peel back with that one. But I got to end. This is probably a good sort of segue, and we've talked about him on the show, so we're not going to go into this extensively. But Le'Veon Bell, Eric, tagged him last year. You know, he's just absolutely dynamic on the field and sometimes unpredictable off of it. Has your tune changed a little bit? I still kind of feel like maybe it's the end of the road between the Steelers and Le'Veon Bell, but I sense that maybe you've kind of changed your tune just a tad on that.
Yeah, I mean, even going into the playoffs, I really felt like there was a good chance we were seeing Bell's final run with the Steelers. I really felt that pretty, I don't say strongly, but I felt like there was a good chance at it because, you know, there had just been some ambivalence between the two sides about the money Bell was asking for and the financial restrictions that would come with giving that money to a player who could have a Larry Johnson arc where he's great, or, you know, or Sean Alexander, one of those bigger backs who has a brilliant 5, 6, 7, 8 year period and then falls off a cliff because of injuries and age and all those things, wear and tear. I mean, the dude had about 400 touches his final year at Michigan State, plus 2,000 his first, you know, 4 or 5 years in the league. So it's adding up. And yet the Steelers, Kevin Colbert, said he wants to make him a Steeler for life. Will that get done? I don't know. I mean, the Bell's threats have been, hey, I'll sit out the season, I'll retire, I'll do whatever. I don't believe the latter, but could he stay away? Sure. He didn't report till August 1st last year, and you know, the absolute deadline of when he had to. And I think, you know, it's going to be tough for them to get a deal done sometime in February. I don't know. I just don't feel like it's likely. But I do think the Steelers are making a concerted effort to keep him.
We have to just mention, of course, this is going to be a monster draft at the running back position. The past couple years have been really good. This one looks like it's going to be even better. And the Steelers spent a third rounder last year on James Conner. He's not the same. I don't know if there are the same type of backs as Le'Veon Bell, obviously, but Conner really doesn't profile that way to me at all. But it wouldn't be surprising to see them maybe go back to the well on day two, depending on what they're thinking with Le'Veon. So he'll be as interesting as anyone to monitor over these next couple weeks. That's going to do it for today's Pro Football Weekly podcast. But as I mentioned, next week we will be at the Combine. We cannot wait to continue breaking down the draft with you guys. Not sure when we're going to tape yet next week, but we will keep you posted on social media. So look for a new episode from Indy at some point, if not a preview before we get there. Check us out on profootballweekly.com. Check out our draft newsletter, guys, if you're not already. Really excited about that. You get free insider draft info 5 days a week. All you have to do is sign up, and you get it often before everyone else. Most of the time, you're the only one who gets it, but we are letting one piece to the web each week, and you get to see it first via the newsletter. So we really appreciate you guys. Eric, I appreciate you being with me. This is the Pro Football Weekly podcast. He's Eric. I am Arthur. We will talk to you next week from Indianapolis at the Scouting Combine.